to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome to Beer Me on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Sarah Jane. I live, work, and love beer here in D.C. During my time in culinary school, I gained an appreciation for good beer and continued my studies in beer at grad school at NYU. Since then, I have been a beer director, beer bar general manager, and I get to continue to explore the beer world with all of you wonderful listeners. Every week, I will have a different guest from different facets of the beer world, from brewers, importers, bartenders, educators, to help us explore this fascinating and dynamic world. Whether you're new to beer or a seasoned professional, we will have something for you. So a little catch up very quickly. I just got back from Denver, where I got to attend the Shelton Brothers Importers, the festival. They put together an impressive, impeccable group of brewers pouring some incredibly rare and incredibly fantastic beer. So I had a chance to go out there and do some interviews. So those will be posted as they are ready. Background noise and not needs to be edited out. But today I'm very, very excited. We are doing a show with Union Craft Brewing out of Baltimore, Maryland. Now, for any of you who are not familiar with Union Craft Brewing, it was founded in 2011, but opened its doors in 2012 in April. They were founded by Kevin Blodger, Adam Benich, and John Zarevitz. Today, I am joined with Kevin Blodger, who is the founder and director of brewing operations, and Lynn Pernobus, who is the operations manager and cask ninja. Probably one of the greatest titles I've ever encountered. Thank you, too, for making the trip down to D.C. I appreciate it.
Well, we're glad to be here. Thanks for having us.
So Union beer has a really soft place in my heart because you produce this really beautiful beer called Old Pro. It's a seasonal beer. And when I've ever been responsible for buying shift drinks for a restaurant, as soon as Old Pro is available, everyone rejoices because at the end of the night, it's what you want to drink. So for maybe listeners who aren't too familiar with Union Craft Brewing, can you give a little blurb to kind of familiarize some listeners with what you all do and what you're all about?
Yeah, so kind of our philosophy for beer is we want to make drinkable, approachable beers that if you're a sophisticated beer drinker or beer snob, whatever, you can appreciate what we do. But if you're new to beer or you don't drink craft beer that often, you can still appreciate and drink our beers. And then the other big focus for Union is community. We love our city of Baltimore. We want to make the city better. We think the city makes us better. And so that's kind of been our mission, is to make great beer and be and foster great community at the brewery and outside in the city, and just like show the love that we have for Baltimore and the love we get back from the city in our products and what we do.
That's beautiful. And, you know, that was reflected in, so the first beer that you all produced was Duck Pin, correct?
Yes.
So that comes, that name stems from a pretty impressive institution in Baltimore.
Yeah, so Duck Pin Bowling has been around. A lot of people say that the owner of the Orioles invented it to keep the players busy during the off season. Babe Ruth, when he played for the Orioles, supposedly loved duck pin bowling. So it's just small balls, smaller pins. There's still some lanes in Baltimore where we can go do it all the time. So yeah, we wanted to, and all the names of our beers, they all kind of reflect something from the city. So with Duck Pin, it's that. We had a Balt Alt beer, just, you know, kind of named after Baltimore. Skipjack for Annapolis and the boat culture we have in Maryland, and Blackwing for the Ravens and the Orioles. So we just kind of try and show our love, like I said, our love for the city, and we want to get that love back, we hope.
So something that you also have done that I really enjoy is you're doing Union Collective,
yeah.
Right? So this is a space that essentially you bought and realized that you had too much space. And reached out to local businesses, small businesses, and, you know, kind of created this space where you're encouraging all these local small businesses.
Yeah, so it's something that we wanted to stay in our neighborhood. We'd been looking at this building for a long time, but knew it was too big for just Union. And we looked at what our tap room had done for us and allowed people to come and meet us, talk to us, get our philosophy, see what we were trying to represent in our beers and what we wanted our beers to be. And then we said, why couldn't other manufacturers that want to stay in the city of Baltimore do the same thing? So have your manufacturing space in the back, but a retail space up front where you get to deliver your message and not have to worry about it going out to other stores or, you know, in case of Baltimore Spirits, you know, bars and restaurants. But come meet the people that are making it, that are, you know, putting their lives and our futures into this, and see what we're all about. So we were able to get some great companies in: Charmery Ice Cream, Baltimore Spirits Company, Vint Coffee Roasters, Earth Trek's built a bouldering gym there. So we've got these great manufacturers coming in. Well Crafted Kitchen, which is right off of our tap room, does these great wood fired pizzas. So we were able to kind of reach out to these people and say, hey, come in here. You guys have the same love for Baltimore that we have. You want to keep your businesses in here. You don't want to go to the county in some nondescript warehouse. You want to be in the city. And so they were all down with it and kind of came through.
And that space is open?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
fully?
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, everybody's open now in the space, right? And so we still have a few spaces left to fill, but it's been a great success. You know, it's been fun so far, and I'd say everybody started going around in July, so it's been fun since then.
And it's been really amazing. I mean, I grew up in this area, and Baltimore has changed drastically, but I feel like in just these few short years, I mean, the craft beer scene, the community, you know, has really morphed.
Well, it's interesting. It's because, you know, I was in that taxi or the Uber here on the way here. And, you know, I went to College Park 20 years ago, and I look at D.C. and I'm like, wow, it's changed so much. Baltimore was slower to start gentrifying. And I don't always know if that's the greatest thing anyways, but the city definitely has changed. There's always been a sophisticated group of beer drinkers there, but the beer production wasn't there. And now we've opened, and you've got, you know, Heavy Seas, that's been there for a long time, and newer guys like Diamondback and Peabody Heights and Gunda and all those guys making beers. And so I think now there was always a great beer drinker there, and now there's great beer coming from the city as well. So that's really been exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, for those of you who haven't ventured out and you live here in D.C., it's an easy, easy, easy trip up on the train.
That's how we came down. So, yeah.
So, and for those of you just tuning in, I'm talking with Kevin Blodger and Lynn Pernobis from Union Craft Brewing in Baltimore. So, Lynn, you are the cask ninja.
Yeah.
We had our friends from Heavy Seas on to kind of do a deep dive into cask production. But if you just want to give our listeners who maybe haven't had the chance to listen to that episode or who are not familiar with cask ale or real ale, just a quick little synopsis on that.
Okay, yeah. So cask making is a different special platform that you can serve beer on that some people are still, you know, not very used to it because they don't want their beer served a little bit warmer or a little bit less carb. But for me, it's fun because it's a place where I can be creative and, you know, experiment with flavor combinations and things like that to see if I can come up with something different and new and put it in a large production space. So cask making, my style of it, is to go up to a beer once it's completed its primary fermentation, and from there decide, do I want to wait for another step in the process of that beer's life to happen before I want to start tweaking with it, or do I want to like wait for it to get its like official dry hop done before I do like hop additions and whatnot. So what you do is I pull it off the fermenter and I add whatever, you know, flavor combination I'm going for. And then I add some more priming sugar and put it into secondary fermentation. From there, you play the waiting game and you hope that you put it in the cold box at the right time and that it does get some carb without being completely flat and that the flavors come together nicely. And a huge, huge, you know, important step that you need to have is control of the flavors that you're adding. So that's something that I'm constantly taking into consideration and when I'm trying to make these things.
Nice. Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit more here, and I want to get a little bit nerdy. Can you talk us through, because what really intrigued me about what you just said was when you have the beer after its initial fermentation, you know, you'll taste it and kind of see where you want it to go, if you want to wait for another step or if you want to go ahead and add something right now. So can you talk us through kind of what that tastes like? For example, like, okay, I tasted this duck pin and these are the flavors that I tasted, but I wanted it to do more of this, so I did this. Is that
right? Yeah.
Okay.
So if I'm just making a random set of casts and I don't have like requests or an event that I'm trying to think of what would go great with that mm-hmm. event, then I'm kind of just toying around and just like reaching into my toy box and being like, okay, like what's working well today with this beer? Or is it wintertime or is it summertime? Like things like that all go into play. And if I know like what my audience is going to be, that also goes into play. So sometimes, like, if I'm making a cast for a hop fest, obviously I'm going to wait for it to get its first dry hop mm-hmm. that it would get normally, and then I'm going to do stuff to it. Or do I want to, like, get interesting and make that beer take a completely different direction? And people would be like, wow, this is Duckpin? Like, I got that text message yesterday, actually, from a friend.
Mm-hmm.
I had added a weird citrus fruit to Duckpin before it got its dry hop, and they were like, wasn't expecting that, but it's cool, it's still light-bodied, it's... You know, and it has that twist. I like giving my twist on it.
Very cool. And you all have also released, you know, certain beers and doing just one different thing. So you kind of have a range. For example, like Duckpin with specific different hops. So, you know, you can kind of taste the difference between those. Like a flight, essentially.
Yeah, for sure. Or if I just want to showcase one hop and I want another one to kind of just be on the back burner, like I'll add... 2-3 or 2-1, 3-1 ratios, because I'm a lot of cast making, and especially when I approach it, I approach it as a math problem.
Okay.
So I'm like, the ratios and everything like that come into play.
Are you comfortable talking through kind of what that exactly is?
So a beer I always think about is Tea Time.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much Old Pro with flavored teas added to it.
Okay.
And when I first started toying with trying to create that type of beer, I started at a pint glass level. And I'm like, how do I make this balance? How do I make this taste good? So I work my way through. I do like 100%, 90%, 80% ratio beer to whatever my ingredient that I'm adding. And my very first Tea Time cask was a bust. And I was like, crap, like, why is this so flat? It tastes good, but it's flat. And I realized that my ratio needed to be concentrated. So when I did like pint glass level, I didn't realize like how much I was diluting down and taking away from like the yeast ratio part of what needed to go into it.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to the calculator and I refined my process and created a rate of 15-1, which is also easy for me to do on a test level because pint glasses are 16 ounces. And
yeah.
All I have to do is multiply like, hey, I'm making a cast today. That's about 80 pints. So I can just quickly, you know,
do the conversion math
yeah.
from there. Very cool. Thanks for humoring me. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
All right. So we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back with Kevin and Lynn from Union Craft Brewing.
Up all night with the same thing in my head. Just wanting you here next to me. It's been a long time, don't you agree? We could turn it all around and say to me. Say it's alright. Drink this shit. It wasn't alright. Drink this shit. It wasn't alright.
Welcome back to Beer Me, recording live at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I am your host, Sarah Jane. Sitting down talking with Kevin Blodger, the founder and director of brewing operations, and Lynn Pernobus, the operations manager and cask ninja from Union Craft Brewing in Baltimore. Thank you again for making the trip down.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So I want to talk a little bit about brewing trends that you all are seeing. You know, you guys have been around for 6 years now. You just celebrated your 6-year anniversary. You have beers that you do year round. You have beers that have a following. People have favorites. You have really fun experimental stuff. You have a really big range of things that you're producing. You've got your new tap room open, so you know people can come and enjoy. But how much of kind of trend chasing do you guys do? Like, for example, like the New England IPA craze that's going on, or you know, the really heavy fruit flavored gozas, or you know, stuff like that. How much are you, you know, kind of brewing what the kids want, or how much are you kind of sticking true to what you you know, what you do.
It's tough because we this is something that we have meetings about and we talk about. Like,
literally on Friday.
Yeah, yeah. Like who are we as a brewery, right? Like I brewed my first Goza in 2009. Mm-hmm. I really like the style. And we do a beer called Older Pro where we barrel age Old Pro with fruit. And it comes, you get this really, you know, really heavy fruit flavors. It's delicious. And those beers are delicious. And we've done some hazy IPAs. We just released one on Friday called Club Banger.
Okay.
But at the same point, I don't want to serve yeasty beer or beer that's not finished, you know? I've been brewing for not a super long time, but about 15 years. Mm-hmm. And
15 years is a long time.
And when I was trained to brew, it was like, you know, you didn't release beer that wasn't clear and beer that wasn't settled. And so it's rethinking all of my training and stuff has been interesting. So to get to swing back to your question, mm-hmm. it's like we like to do some trend chasing. Yeah, we want to brew beer. We want people to buy our beer, right?
Yeah.
And if New England IPAs are the hot thing right now, let's do it. But let's do it the union way. So we're still going to condition our beer a little bit. We're still going to let some of that drop out. It'll have a haze to it, but it's not going to be chunky. We're not going to release a chunky beer.
Yeah.
The fruit-flavored beers we like to drink. The Older Pros, we love those beers. And that's mm-hmm. like, Lynn doesn't give herself enough credit, but like anything we release that has fruit or spice or any addition to it, she's put the work back working on those ratios and figuring out how we're going to add the fruit and what fruit we're going to use, and this is a combination, and we're going to blend it like this. So she works really hard to perfect those beers, and when they come out, they're so beautiful. Like, why not release a fruit-forward beer? So we do those, but we just released a Rauch beer last week, you mm-hmm. know, a smoked lager. We had an Alt beer, some of our core beers, for a long time. So I'm a traditionalist, but there's always going to be new stuff and new trends, and some of those are interesting to me, some of them aren't. And we'll still brew some of them that aren't interesting to me because people want to drink them and people want to try them. And I know that I can design a beer and it's going to be good. And then we can play with it and figure out where we're going to go with it from there.
Yeah. Nice. And are there particular beers that you all are really excited to brew? I mean, I know typically you brew seasonally. But, you know, is there a particular beer that, you know, as soon as you start making it, you're like, oh, this is like... You know, the same way a chef gets, you know, oh, you know what? I love making Cachoe Pepe. This is like, just feels good to make.
I mean, for me, it's going, you know, we kept our old brew house at the old location, and we're making a series of beers called the Rough Draft beers okay. out of there. And so brewing the Rauch beer about a month ago was fun to me because it's a style I really enjoy that I know a lot of people don't enjoy, but now I can brew this small batch of it. We can get it out. And, you know, doing our seasonals every year is fun because you know it's that time of year. You brought up Old Pro. We know in March or April when we first start to brew that beer that, hey, summer's right around the corner. And we love how much people love that beer, you know. So it's fun to brew beers like that and say, all right, this season's coming up or this is about to happen or snow pants time, it's about to get cold out. So that's always fun for me.
Well, if there's any leftover smoked lager, like always send it my
come
way.
Come up to the tap room. We have it on tap right now. So.
And so, Lynn, you handle a lot of the fruit, any kind of additives or anything like that. You know, again, I'm going to like get nerdy with you a little bit here. Is there certain fruit that, you know, is particularly challenging? And I'm kind of asking from the perspective of any homebrewers who might be listening who want to kind of experiment with different things, if there was maybe some tips you could give them.
For sure. Again, it comes back to what form of the flavor are you trying to extract? Like, do you want the juiciness of it? So if you want that, you want to take the puree route. When do you add it? If you want it to be juicy, do you want it to be fermented out a little bit so it loses some of its flavor? Those are things to think about.
And when you say, sorry, when you say juicy, for people who aren't sure what does that mean? Does that mean like the fruit forward flavor or the sweetness or like the kind of mouthfeel that you get?
It would be the mouthfeel, the fruit forward sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
Not overly sweet, okay. but the sweetness for sure. Like I think of like all kinds of stone fruit that are fleshy, like peaches and mangoes and stuff like that. Juicy. If you want to go more the acidity route,
mm-hmm.
you want to use the citrus. But the citrus, you don't typically use the fleshy parts. You want to use the zesty parts. Or do you want something that's way less intense and isn't really juicy, but it's still delicious, like cherries and pomegranates? They're a pain in the butt to deal with, and you don't get much out of all the work that you get into it, but that's, you know, platforms to think about. And starting to toy with things like spices and like learning what the stability is of cinnamon, once I figure that out, I have a sour that I'm ready to throw in barrels and surprise you guys with.
Oh, nice. I was just going to ask a follow-up this. Is there something that you all are working on that's going to be coming up that you're allowed to say on radio that you're excited about?
There's something that I have in the works that I could talk about, but I'm not going to, just in case.
Totally fair.
The last thing I want to do is talk about a beer that I'm, like, excited to brew because I've never written a recipe before, and then it kind of doesn't come out the way I want, and then people are like, well, what happened in that brew? And I'm like, next time.
It's always a work in progress there.
Fair enough.
So we were working on coming up with a new IPA that we're really excited about.
What kind of IPA?
Yeah, an IPA, right?
Oh, just an IPA.
It's so weird now. There's so much.
I know. Follow-up question, I was like, I have to do it. But.
Is it a hazy IPA? Is it a West Coast? Is it, you know, and so it's like, it's an IPA. It's going to be hop forward like an IPA should be. It's going to have great flavor to it. It's going to be a great beer, I hope. And so that's what I really get excited about. It's like, how do we bring new flavors to these beers and what hops are out there? And it's really been great kind of developing these relationships with these new hop growers, talking to people that make local malt and finding out like what flavors can we pull out and put into these beers that we're making. So that's what I'm really jazzed about working on right now.
Nice. And kind of continuing to embrace that local community.
And do cool events. And Baltimore Beer Week just happened. It's the 10th annual Baltimore Beer Week.
That's right. How did that go?
It was awesome. And it's so great because, you know, I got two young kids. I don't get to get out that often. And so to go out during this week, I got to see a lot of my friends that I don't see as much anymore. And so that's always fun. And you get to drink a lot of great beer and celebrate. So I love Baltimore Beer Week.
Nice. And as far as I want to kind of loop back on your renovation that you did for your tap room. Something that I've talked about a lot on the show is the experience that the guest gets in the tap room and how important that is. You know, there's so much thought and there's so much preparation put into beer, but the actual experience that they get from something as simple as the cleanliness of the bathrooms and are dogs allowed and can you bring your kids and, you know, that kind of thing. You know, what were some things that you guys have done to kind of build guest experience?
Well, so it's funny you bring my kids. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're leading us into this. but everywhere I go, I was in Denver for GABF, and I got asked about this on the news. We have this policy called Adult Swim, where kids are allowed from 12 to 6, and then at 6 p.m. we ask that people under 21 leave. And that was all born from our experience we had when we first opened the new tap room. We had so much more space, and kids could run around. For the most part, parents were very responsible, kids were very responsible, but there was a few kids that weren't being watched. We had some stuff, we bought some vintage arcade games that were broken, had some experiences where we found a toddler kind of crawling around in front of the bathroom, but their parents weren't there, and it was really stressing the staff out.
Yeah.
And so at first we said, let's do an 8 p.m. thing, but it seemed 6 o'clock seemed like the right time. Like, we would watch kids and parents would come in, and what happens is it's not fair to the kids. The parents come in, they sit down, they have a few beers, they start talking, and we had some stuff for kids to do, but not much. The kids would get bored and start running around, but we never envisioned ourselves as kind of this kid space. We wanted to be family friendly and you bring your kid, but not for 3 hours. Come get a growler, leave, we have, you know, get some food or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it turned into this whole thing, and when we announced it, it turned into a kind of thing. I learned terms I never knew, like dink for double income, no kids. I didn't know what that meant. But like, people fought back and forth on our Facebook page about it. And it turned into this whole thing. We're all about embracing community, and it turned into this whole really divisive thing. And that's not what we were looking for. But since we've instituted the policy about a month ago, everything seemed to have settled out. And
nice.
People are very respectful of it. And I think they get it. And we still have, of every brewery in Baltimore, the most kid-friendly hours of any brewery up there. So we're still proud about that. But yeah, so the whole experience thing, we have two guys, Chris Attenborough and Jeremy Moy, that run the tap room and set up this whole brand experience. And they're, you know, seasoned restaurant and bar professionals. And so they've turned our tap room into this great experience that me, Adam, and John probably could have never done without these two guys there kind of helping us out, kind of guiding what the guest experience would be like. So we want everybody to come up, and we think you'll enjoy yourself and have a great time. Kids or no kids.
Kids or no kids.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much. And, you know, for all of you listeners out there, it is, like I said, a very, very easy, easy trip up to Baltimore for sure. And there's plenty to explore. There's plenty to see. And thank you all for coming to chat on Beer Me. Just a quick announcement for the listeners who tuned in to my chat with Teresa McCullough from the Smithsonian. She sent me an update. This on Saturday, November 3rd, the National Museum of American History is hosting an event called Last Call. So this is their biggest beer history public program. This is kind of coinciding with their Food History Weekend. So Last Call will be a conversation among four brewers about the importance of region to American beer. So the participating breweries are New Glarus Brewing Company, Bow and Arrow Brewing Company, Scratch Brewing Company, and Cajun Fire Brewing Company. So each brewer offers a unique perspective on the importance of region to beer. They're going to be pouring some beers that you typically will not see in the DC market. And then the museum will have several objects out of storage available for viewing. So these will feature kind of beer-related objects from their collections that aren't typically available for viewing. So the tickets, I forget the exact price, but I just bought mine and they're very, very affordable. You can get it off the American History Smithsonian website, but definitely, definitely check that out. I know there are a lot of beer things going on that weekend, but I think that one is definitely worth your while.
Cajun Fire is one of the only other African-American owned breweries in the country, so go check it out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week on Beer Me on Full Service Radio, recorded live from the Line Hotel here in Washington, D.C. Cheers.
Cheers.